Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com. Get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, secret product pictures before they're anywhere else, other stuff at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Melody Lauer.
Hello.
See, that works.
Does it?
Hello.
Hello. Hello, like, out there.
No, no, no.
Not out there. I can't say out there.
Hello. It's like a very Mrs. Doubtfire thing to say.
Oh, I like that movie.
Yeah.
Hello.
Yes. Hey, guess what?
What's that?
Are you okay?
Yeah, I just went to answer you and had this like bleh thing happen. Yes, what, John?
Don't expect people to go through puberty after having three children, but whatever. Hey, this segment's brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition and LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. And remember, unless you're on fire drowning, you never can have too much ammo. So, speaking of Lucky Gunner, we've got the High Grand Magus of Clue of Lucky Gunner joining us.
The High Grand Magus of Clue.
Yes.
Hmm. Wow.
I was going to say High Grand Wizard, and then I realized there's a very bad negative connotation with that due to other organizations who have stolen that term from nerds. I'm like, Magus works better.
Okay. I have no idea what you're talking about,
good.
But I'll go with it.
That's good.
Okay.
It's Chris Baker. Chris, how's it going, man?
Good, John. How you doing?
That's good. Now, you're going to have to put that, like, on your videos now, as far as from
yeah, that'll
now
be
on
my new email signature.
Good. Good. High Grand Magus of Clue.
Did I want to be, like, the priestess or something of training? Or whatever?
I don't remember. But, no, princess. That's what it
no,
was.
No, no, I would never. That's projection.
So there you go. God. We're losing our sponsorship right now. Right now. So anyway, for those that don't know, who are you, what do you do, and we'll hop right into today's show.
Yeah, I'm Chris Baker. Worked for LuckyGunner.com for about 6 years. We sell ammo on the internet, in case you tuned out during the sponsorship deal a minute ago. It's my job to, I kind of work on the marketing side of things, and I guess I'm just responsible for making sure more people know who we are, and primarily do that through creating resources for shooters. So we've got a blog that we post articles on, YouTube channel, and we do, you know, a lot of training resources, how-to sort of videos, product reviews. We've done a lot of ballistic gelatin testing. Mm-hmm. And as far as who I am, not like a professional door kicker or anything like that, even though we're doing mostly self-defense oriented content. But I was just a dude with a background in media production, and was teaching occasional state level concealed carry permit class. Then kind of like you, John, I was fortunate enough to sort of stumble upon the online community of people who were really clued in. Mm-hmm. And started reading from a lot of stuff from people like Todd Green, Claude Warner, Kathy Jackson, and that kind of led to taking more training. And since I've been with Lucky Gunner, I've had the opportunity to take several hundred hours worth of training from people I'd consider the best in the country at passing along this knowledge.
Right.
And now I get to take little pieces of that and share it with the rest of the shooting community, hopefully in a way that is easy to understand and digest.
Well, and that's actually a really interesting approach, I think. So I've been involved. I mean, and you know, I know this should be obvious, but full disclosure, I have a I have a business relationship with Lucky Gunner. But I think it's interesting to see different companies take different approaches as far as how they market. And what has always struck me as kind of nice about you guys is you're actually trying to improve the community in very meaningful ways, in ways that are not necessarily obviously self-serving. I don't know if that makes sense or not. But like there's, you know, as far as resources go, you guys are a really good resource that happen to sell ammo at a good price, you know?
Yeah, it's, and you know, not to you know, sound like we're more charitable than we actually are. I mean, at the end of the day, it does have to you know, serve the bottom line somehow. But we just kind of look at it like the more informed people are, the better decisions they make in terms of preparing themselves for self-defense or whatever. And those folks who are kind of clued in tend to shoot a lot more, and shooting more means they use more ammo, and that's good for them, and that's good for us. So
right.
I think it ends up being sort of a mutually beneficial thing.
Well, there you go. So here's something you brought up that I thought would be interesting to talk about when we were discussing some stuff that we're because Melody and I are going to be in Tennessee just tomorrow, recording some stuff for you guys. So it's very like inception up in here. But one of the things that you were talking about that I thought would be interesting to discuss is the importance of like training in guns and techniques that are maybe not as prevalent anymore. You know, and why would we want to do that?
Yeah, so one of the things I've kind of accidentally sort of developed a reputation for, I guess, is some of the revolver-related content that we do, and that kind of started, I guess, about 3 years ago, and mostly just because at the time I thought revolvers were fun, but I kind of wanted to dig in deeper to the topic and feel like, okay, instead of just approaching this purely as a fun thing, like what can we actually learn? Like what lessons have been learned in the past that maybe are not as prevalent anymore in how we discuss these guns. And so over the course of a year, year and a half, I really kind of dug into it. And, you know, I didn't uncover anything earth-shattering, but what I did find is a lot of pushback from folks who are, you know, came up in the era without revolvers being a part of their training or any part of their I guess development along the journey of becoming a shooter. And I realized at some point that, you know, maybe there's an opportunity to turn this into more than just you know, a little blog series on revolvers. Maybe I could turn my attention towards some of these other things that people maybe aren't, I'm not saying the knowledge is lost or in any serious danger of being lost, but you know, it is like kind of a clue when you look around, and most of the people who are talking about this stuff are like my dad's age. And so I wanted to make sure that we're still learning some of these lessons from things like whether it's revolvers, pump action shotguns, bolt action rifles, some of the stuff that's just not as as sexy as a black polymer modern firearms.
Right. What do you think, I guess when you started getting into that, what was something that you saw being taught or some knowledge that was being passed on that you didn't think was as prevalent with some of the more modern stuff?
Well, I guess, you know, pretty early on, I got kind of frustrated just with the nature of the dis- discussion, because whenever revolvers come up, it's always a matter of like, well, is it better than a semi-auto, or which one is better? And like, can we duke this out and then determine once and for all who's the champion of the self-defense platform? And, I don't think that's really all that productive. And so when you look past that a little bit, you start to see things, that, you know, people like Daryl Bulkey, who you had on a couple weeks ago, have known for a long time, just stuff about like human reaction time and some of the advantages of having a little more length in a trigger, for example. That's not usually one of the stated advantages of using a revolver versus, say, a Glock or a modern striker pistol.
Well, hold that.
But it's there.
Yeah, hold that thought, because we got to go to break. So right now we're talking with Chris Baker. I'll try this again. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977, a legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability, with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. So we're talking with Chris Baker from Lucky Gunner Ammo. And you were saying right before the break that one of the, like with revolvers, for instance, one of the positives with those that not many people talk about is the length of travel as far as allowing you more time to make decisions.
Yeah, and that's, that advantage stands in stark contrast to what people typically talk about, which is the reliability factor, which I think is, grossly overstated when you look at, a quality modern semi-auto. I don't think the revolver necessarily has this enormous advantage. There's some conditions when that might be the case. But, looking at other less talked about features of that platform, I think was educational for me. And it's still not, less than that most people want to talk about. It's not a sexy sort of topic online. And, the discussion very quickly goes back to reliability or, whatever, like you semi-auto guys just hosing bullets at people, that kind of thing. I try to elevate the level of the conversation as much as possible. But finding those small little lessons in there, I think is the hidden treat of digging into some of these other platforms that are not getting quite as much attention these days.
Well, it's kind of interesting for me too, because I have spent quite a bit of time looking at stuff that we don't do anymore, just so that I understand, like, where we came from and all that. But like that's one of the big things for me, is I'll occasionally see tactics or techniques that someone may be espousing as the new greatest thing, and I'm like, well, no, they played with that like 70 years ago and it didn't work for XYZ reason. And what are we doing? You know what I mean?
So yeah, and I think I remember a while ago you mentioning something about I think it was in regards to the sort of C-clamp grip on the fore end of an AR, and how you had seen some kind of image from like a couple hundred years ago or something like that.
Yeah, so I was, funny enough, and I never ended up writing the article because Pat died, but I was talking with Pat Rogers about it a lot. And the best, and I was talking with him and where that came up from. In modern context, as far as I can tell, for us, the guy that started doing it and making it sort of prevalent in U.S. culture was Benny Cooley. But where it came from is, if you look all the way back to like spear and pike techniques from the 15 and 1600s,
mm-hmm.
It was really prevalent. And then when you look at like you know, matchlock rifles and muskets and stuff like that. They were teaching it because of bayonet use. And then it kind of went from there and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, a lot of people think like the C-clamp grip started with, you know, with Magpul guys, and it didn't. And, you know, Benny Cooley wasn't the first one that did it either, but he was, as far as I can tell, the one that popularized, at least here in the States, having it up in the eye line and using the sights as opposed to it being like a hip fire technique. But I mean, like, I've seen training video of it, oddly enough, as far back as like World War I with bolt action rifles, where it was a close range tactic. Anyway, the point being is that, see, stuff like that's super cool to me. You know, and it's like, oh, I know exactly where this came from. I know exactly what the equipment limitations were as to why it was developed. And I know I have a strong idea as far as to, you know, who switched it over and why they did it. I mean, and I like stuff like that, but I'm a nerd, you know?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, I know, you know, Carl Wren is working on his historical handgun curriculum, a 2-day class he's going to be doing with sort of walking through the history of 20th century sidearms. And I know you and I are both really excited about that kind of thing. I don't know who else is nerdy enough to really get that stoked about it. But I think there's, you know, just beyond the sort of historical, just liking it for the sake of it, there is a lot we can learn from that kind of stuff. And there's always going to be lessons, though, that have to be relearned that someone else has already figured out years ago. And at the same time, you know, I'm not saying that we should be teaching pistol techniques the same way they were at, like, gun sight in the 1970s, because stuff evolves and we learn new lessons. And part of my my interest in this is taking some of that old hardware and applying new lessons to it. You know, like this past weekend, I went to a little like half-day lever action class that Lee Weems was doing, and I had my my little Marlin lever action with a red dot sight on it, which is not something you see a whole lot. And you know, some of the other guys in the class were sort of eyeballing it, like, oh, I don't know about this. But when they all got a chance to try it, they're like, oh yeah, this makes sense. I get it. It actually adds some utility to this rifle that I already like a lot. And so, you know, not saying we have to do evil, terrible things to all these old guns to force them into the 21st century, but there is a lot we can learn from sort of smushing together some of the new stuff with some of the old stuff.
Well, and it's like, so it's funny too. I know you're a big fan of like shotguns, for instance, which up until recently had been very much surpassed by like the AR-15 pattern rifles and things of that nature. But when you actually start looking at what especially civilian self-defense encounters look like, the shotgun makes a lot of sense, and there's a lot of things that can be done with that as well, you know?
Yeah, and really it's not just again, like history for history's sake. Like, whether or not you think the AR-15 is superior to the shotgun, the fact of the matter is there are millions and millions of shotguns out there in the hands of just everyday people. And those people might want to use them to defend themselves. And if we, in like a training world, tell them, oh, well, you know, that's not good enough. You got to have an AR-15 before you can even start.
Yeah.
You know, you're basically telling the guy he's got to drop $800 on hardware before he can even defend himself sufficiently, when he's got a perfectly acceptable firearm in his possession already. So wouldn't it be better if we could learn how to get the most out of that and pass that information on to that person, rather than trying to force them to do things to what we think is optimal? That there's a big difference between something that's maybe less than ideal and something that's completely obsolete. There's a big gray area in there where a lot of people have these guns, a lot of people are comfortable with them, and we should be able to show them how to get the most out of them without forcing them kicking and screaming into the 21st century to make them carry or use whatever gun we think is best because it's, quote, ideal.
Well, and we've only got about a minute left in this segment, and then I'd like to talk about that a little bit more, but it seems to me that one of the mistakes that we make, especially when we're like enthusiastic about stuff, is expecting everyone else to be as enthusiastic about it. And if they're not, then clearly they don't care, you know? So
yeah, absolutely.
We'll get into that in a second. Right now we're talking with Chris Baker from Lucky Gunner Ammo. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it. And that's where Surefire comes in. From the USB rechargeable 300 lumen sidekick, the 500 lumen X300 Ultra or M600 Scout Light, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell "Aziz Light" ever again. Doesn't matter if you're shining a light at potential threat or just helping your co-host see through their eyelids.
Oh.
When you need all the lumens for longer, you need Surefire. And now is a special offer to ballisticradio.com. Listeners, you can get 30% off the Surefire.com web store by entering the discount code All the Lumens, that is ALLTHELUMENS, at surefire.com. And I've actually got a flashlight that doesn't exist yet in my hand right now. And I gave Melody all the lumens with it.
I'm having like that, you know, have you been in a car accident? And
recently,
you see like things out of this corner of your eyes and you have like an overreaction because of the.
Right.
Every time you move in that chair, I like twitch because I'm waiting for my eyes to be burned.
Like full pincus up in here.
Speaking
of, so we're talking with Chris Baker.
Wait, what?
No, hold on. I got something for this.
You better come full circle.
No, I'm going
like,
to.
What?
So we were talking before the break, Chris, about like, you know, sort of how we, get people interested in stuff and things like that. And one of the things that Rob Pincus has said that I know he gets a lot of flack from certain areas of the training community, but something he said that I actually do agree with is he said a lot of the people that are driving things are hobbyists, whereas self-defense and guns are their hobby, and they're willing to dedicate more time and resources to things than the average gun owner. And do you think that, how do we get people that aren't hobbyists interested in taking things seriously or at least getting proficient with stuff? Do you kind of know what I'm asking or what I'm talking about? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. And I think, not to be down on hobbyists, we love hobbyists. They buy lots of ammo. That's kind of how I make my living. So
I'm a hobbyist.
Carry on.
Yes.
I love you people. But yeah, there's a lot of people out there who are not hobbyists. Some of them will become hobbyists or could become hobbyists. Some of them never will. And I think that's where we make a mistake is approaching it like every person who is a new shooter is a hobbyist in training.
Yeah.
Like you're going to be let me start teaching you the, 7 fundamentals of handgun marksmanship because that's the first step on your way to becoming a master marksman as opposed to like, here's how you don't shoot yourself. Here's how you load your gun so you don't, your kid doesn't find it or whatever the case may be. The real practical stuff, because once we get into all that other stuff, they're probably going to tune out and I think we're going to lose them. And, if we want to, meet people where they're at, I think we have to really take a hard look at what lessons they really need the most and start with that rather than starting with like what we think of as the path to, greater shooting ability, which may or may not even be their goal.
Right.
The interesting thing about that, though, is when you kind of present people and present that kind of information to people in a package, a lot of times they make the assumption that that was all there was to learn. And when we don't encourage them to, we don't treat them like this is the first step on a longer timeline, that they just assume it was the first and last step. So how do you balance that between, like, here's the information that you need to know, but it's not complete, and yet at the same time not treating them like a hobbyist or a potential hobbyist, like you said?
Yeah, and you know, I don't necessarily know the answer to that. I can tell you what it's not. I wrote about this not too long ago on our blog, but back when I was doing concealed carry classes, I remember a lady in one of my classes, and she was a family friend, and she had showed up because she had been robbed at gunpoint in her house. And I'm standing there telling her the difference between isosceles and Weaver stance, because that was part of the state mandated curriculum that we had to cover in the 8 hours of class. And I'm just thinking to myself, like, this is not what this lady needs right now. She needs something that's going to, this may be a little more direct and straightforward. Like, this is maybe good information if you are going to come back to another class and another class. But, you know, like you said, we don't present it like that. We present it like, well, here it is, and if you come back, there's more. But we don't necessarily tell people, like, well, hey, if you don't come back, maybe this isn't really going to help you that much.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why do you think this happens? I mean, is it where in the past did we as a larger community go wrong that this is just sort of like standard practice now, as far as we're trying to, like, make little cookie cutter automaton students?
You know, I couldn't say what happened historically, but I do think, like, even though a lot of people have recognized the problem, like Claude Warner has talked about it at length, and a lot of other folks have kind of recognized it, I still think there's a lot of resistance to changing the way we do things in the training world. I remember, I think it was a couple of years before he died, Todd Green put up a blog post kind of about this. It was basically saying, you know, if he was going to teach somebody, if he had like 3 hours to teach somebody everything they were ever going to know about a handgun, it would look completely different than if he was doing like a shooting 101 class for somebody who was, you know, going to be a hobbyist. And right. I remember there being a lot of resistance to that idea. He got a lot of pushback, and people didn't like that, because I think a lot of folks think that, you know, well, if you're not going to invest into the training, then you're not serious about this. And if you're not serious about it, you don't deserve to own a firearm, and you should just get a can of pepper spray and leave it at that. And, you know, what we could argue all day whether that's an appropriate path or not, but it's not reality. There's a lot of people who are just going to own a firearm, whether they're well-trained or not. So doesn't it make sense to give them the information that we can feed them at whatever level they are, and help them kind of meet them halfway, rather than, you know, forcing it down their throats that they're going to have to continually be training in order to stand any chance of survival? I think that's kind of, at that point, we lose the right to be heard, and no one wants to listen to us anymore.
Well, and it seems like, too, that oftentimes it is not popular inside of our community to actually discuss what real self-defense situations look like. Because if I say something like, well, the typical self-defense shooting is actually a very easy shooting problem to solve, what people immediately jump to is, wow, John's saying that you don't need to have a high level of skill, which anyone who knows me and anyone who knows some of the things that I have done to myself to get there knows is not true. I mean, I'm 100% about having as much skill as you possibly can, you know, given your resources and whatever your personal limitations are. But it seems to me that oftentimes we start overstating the case and using facts that are not facts at all. They're just honestly, sort of like fear-based lies to like convince people into things. And I don't like that kind of salesmanship, you know. It's like if I can't give you good reasons to do something, then maybe you're right. Maybe you shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we have kind of done people a disservice in sort of being dishonest about the nature of the problem. And I think there are certainly benefits to being, you know, quote unquote overprepared.
Yes.
Beyond just the advantage of being being overprepared prepares you for those what do you call them, the sentinel events, like the one in a million,
right.
You know, crazy, you do have to take the headshot on the terrace at 50 yards kind of thing.
Right.
Being really keyed in certainly helps with those kind of situations. It also is good, I think, though, to just improve the overall level of knowledge in the shooting world.
Well,
the more people know how to shoot really well, the more people might know how to shoot a little bit better.
Right, and hold that thought because we got to go to break. Right now we're talking with Chris Baker. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. So we're talking with Chris Baker from Lucky Gunner Ammo, and we were sort of having the conversation about, like, over-preparing skills and stuff like that. And, you know, one of the things, and I'd kind of like to get your take on this, the more overlearned a skill is, the easier it is to perform a lesser skill with lower stress levels and, honestly, just more time to process information, don't you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And, anything I know or anything I could parrot on that subject is going to come directly from John Hearn, who's done a ton of research on that topic and just really, I think done a huge service to the community and sort of digging into the science behind that. The more you know, the better your skill level is with the firearms into the equation, it frees up mental horsepower for you to be able to make decisions, which I think is probably arguably the more important part of the equation anyway. So the decision about, you know, when to shoot, should I shoot, when to not shoot, when a shoot situation becomes a no-shoot situation, all that kind of stuff is really hard to do if you're at the same time trying to remember whether or not your gun has a round in the chamber, or if your gun has a safety that functions, that kind of thing. Like, if that's your preoccupation, it's with the hardware, you're really not going to make as good a decision in the heat of the moment, I don't think.
Well, and so I see this over and over again in class where once people get task overloaded, they start doing really goofy things. Like, they wouldn't ever do it, you know, if they were standing still on a range with all the time in the world to do something. But, like, I can I can pull out a whistle and a stopwatch. And here, the easiest one that we do, and we do it on day two in our class, is just, okay, here. Shoot at this target until I blow a whistle a second time, and if you don't have any effective hits when I blow the whistle the second time, I want you to internalize something bad has happened. You've not died, but something bad has happened. And, like, I don't tell people how many rounds they're going to fire. I don't tell people how long they have. I don't tell people what the bad thing is that they're supposed to internalize if they haven't gotten hits. And it's, like, really messes with people. I mean, really messes with people.
Well, and even
it really doesn't take much.
Yeah, even really, really high level people that we have, coming to classes, oftentimes when you give them something completely outside the purview of their desired skill or their chosen type of shooting, will suddenly the reload that they've done a billion times is now completely messed up.
Yeah, I remember very distinctly, however many years ago, when I bought my first shot timer, and I took it out to the range, and so for the first time, I'm doing drills on my own with some kind of time pressure, which is, you know, the least amount of pressure you can possibly induce, I think. Like, there's no one else on the range, no one's watching me, video camera's not running or anything like that. And I remember doing some drill, I don't know what it was, but I found myself, like, after a couple reps, I was shooting the gun one-handed, and it was like a two-handed drill. And I'm like, what am I doing? Like, there's no reason for me to be doing this. And then when you see, you know, surveillance camera footage of some guy with a terrible grip on his gun shooting it one-handed at a bad guy, you're like, yeah, that's what happens. Like, when you have not overlearned that skill of handgun grip, for example, it kind of goes out the window pretty quickly.
Well, and it was funny, too, because, like, I was trying to show someone what they were doing at class, and I was trying to, like, mimic what they were doing that I found to be a suboptimal way to do it, and I couldn't even make myself do it, like, trying to. Because I had spent so much time learning another way and practicing another way that, like, when I tried to do I'll do bunny ears around it, the wrong technique, it wasn't happening. And I'm like, well, that's actually good. That makes me feel better because if I can't even make myself do it when I'm trying, that hopefully means that I just can't do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So as far as we got like 4 or 5 minutes left. So what are you excited about, I guess, inside of the community at large? Are there any trends that you have seen that make you really happy to see?
I mean, I'm still, like, you know, new enough to this that there is still stuff that's new to me. You know, like, I haven't been at this for years and years where there's nothing new under the sun. But I get real excited about hearing people like Carl Wren's lecture on the 1% and kind of his approach to, like, how we might change the training industry to appeal to a different group of folks. I think that's really exciting. I hope that he sees some success with some of those you know, different approaches that he's talking about, and that, you know, we do reach new people. I think there is a growing trend of going out of our way to be more or less apolitical when we get into the training sphere, because there's, you know, certainly a time and a place to advocate for Second Amendment rights and for, you know, whatever political cause we have. But I think when we get into a classroom, that we need to leave that stuff at the door and just focus on the people and the knowledge they need to know. I think that is becoming a more accepted way of doing things, and I think that'll bring in new blood into that 1%, the people who are really interested and really crave the knowledge for the sake of the knowledge, not for the sake of being a part of some kind of political community they can identify with.
Right. Well, and it seems like, too, that, you know, self-defense is a basic human right that is it's not given to us by any, you know, government entity or something. We just, it's our right as human beings. And it's our right as human beings, whether or not I agree with other things that you think or believe. And it's always struck me as odd when people, it's like, well, for this group, it's cool, but for this other group, no. And it's like, no, that's not how this works. So as far as here's one thing I'd kind of like to talk about. Tell me real quick about the new video series that you and I are doing together and where people can watch that. And that'll probably take us to the end of the show.
Yeah, so we put together a couple of training videos, basically just outlining different drills. Pretty straightforward stuff. If you've been around the training world for long, I think you'll probably recognize most of it. But I think seeing somebody else do the drill it can sometimes be helpful beyond just reading what you're supposed to do on a piece of paper. You get an idea of like what kind of time to expect or what kind of performance to expect on the drill. Little things you can do to make the drills easier, that kind of thing. So we've got two of those up live right now. We've got another one that'll probably go up in the next week or two. And hopefully we'll film some more this week.
Nice. Nice. And for those of you that are looking forward to see Start Shooting Better series. So, and we've done what? Dot Torture so far and 5x5? So, well, 5 to the 5th.
Yeah, power and time. We've got a failure drill and a build drill that are in the can that we, when those are edited, they'll be live. And we'll probably do some more this week.
Nice.
And then those can be found on our YouTube channel. Just search for Lucky Gunner Ammo, or you can get it on our blog if you're not into the whole moving pictures thing. It's luckygunner.com/lounge.
Nice. Well, hey, that actually is perfect timing because it's the end of the show. Chris, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to talk to us. I think you guys are doing great stuff. I certainly appreciate the support.